Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other than my friends, I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to teach you and educate you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. We can't get a strong employment number like we did on Friday and just forget about it on Monday. It's too important to leave in the dust like some kind of run-of-the-mill data point. So on a day where the Dow dipped 11 points, the S&P edged down 0.04%, and the Nasdaq advanced 0.03%, I think it's actually worth thinking about, if not resurrecting, what the non-farm payroll report means for our economy and our stocks. First, as I said for years, this is the single most consequential set of numbers we get from the government. Nothing comes even close to the monthly labor report. That's how big it is. I first analyzed this over a decade ago, and it's never lost its significance when I look over the years. This is the number that controls a lot of the narrative. So let's break down the release. First thing that catches my eye is the household survey, where the unemployment rate's 3.8%, and the economy created 300,000 jobs last month. People yawn at that number. That's ridiculous. We have 3.8% unemployment when we've had 11 rate hikes, when there's a 5.3% short rate historically high, when the Fed's attempting to suck the liquidity out of the system. Can you imagine how low the unemployment rate would be in this economy if the Fed were trying to create jobs instead of stamping them out in order to beat inflation? Right now, this country is nothing short of an economic miracle. Scrolling down the Labor Department release, the 303,000 jobs created is much higher than the 231,000 average over the prior 12 months. That is remarkably hot. This morning, I got to interview Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo about a $6.6 billion grant to Taiwan Semiconductor so it can help support an investment of $65 billion in three greenfield leading-edge semiconductor foundries in Phoenix, Arizona. If it takes $6.5 billion, by the way, to get $65 billion investment, that's pretty darn good carrot. But when we drilled down, Madam Secretary said the project would create 20,000 construction jobs and 6,000 direct manufacturing jobs when finished. I, frankly, was flabbergasted, because I couldn't even imagine where they're going to find these people. It's going to be borderline impossible with unemployment this low. We simply don't have enough documented and permitted construction workers in that part of the country, and America doesn't produce enough engineers to ensure that Taiwan Semi can get things going by the end of the decade. Given that these are the best of the best chips, at least for right now, we're going to have to recruit like you wouldn't believe. We only produce 70,000 undergraduate engineers each year. Taiwan, a small island nation with not even a tenth of our population, has 11 major engineering programs with 176,000 students. What a disparity. When you consider that our country added 39,000 construction jobs in March, about double the average monthly gain, it's worth asking where the heck Taiwan Semi is supposed to find an extra 20,000 construction workers, maybe in the greater Phoenix area. You kidding me? They will have to do a nationwide search to have all the people they need. This is not the old days where there was plenty of surplus labor in the United States. Most of the other numbers, like part-time employment or labor force participation, were little change in March. These numbers would typically be going up, maybe even up big at this point in the business cycle, which would put downward pressure on wages. No, it's not happening. So we scroll further down, and we see that average hourly earnings for all employees increased by 0.3%. Over the past 12 months, wages are up 4.1%. That's incredibly consistent and, yes, incredibly strong. It makes me question whether the Fed should even declare that they were done tightening. Because with this kind of hot labor report, it sure feels like they left the job unfinished. How about the jobs? Where are they? We put 72,000 people to work in healthcare. Now, we know that nurses are incredibly short supply, but 18,000 of those are in nursing and residential care facilities. Again, where the heck are they going to find these people? Or how about find more of these people? Or how about hospital workers? They added 27,000 jobs. Could that be more post-COVID surgery, something we know has hurt the health insurers? They have to keep hiring people. You know that the price of labor is going to go much higher. We're constantly discussing the state of the consumer. Aren't they cash-strapped at this point? Apparently, we should stop worrying people because employment in leisure and hospitality trended up big. The report said, and this is now returned to it's now returned to pre-pandemic February 2020 levels. That's an increase of 49,000 jobs. That's another sign of a roaring economy. It could be that more people are coming back to work and going out to the same old places. It could be that the work-from-home people have started being more social. It could mean that people are long on money and short on time and realize that they missed too much of life when they were cooped up in their homes for COVID. Remember, COVID changed our habits, and unchanging them is not easy. We acted like it went like that. It didn't. Then there's one that seems beyond the pale. Government hiring at 71,000 positions. Which is higher than the average monthly gain of 54,000. I can't even imagine what that's about. These are the big gainers. Everything else is pretty much the same, which is a statement in itself. Now, there could be some give here from immigrants who get documented status and work permits, but the government won't disclose those numbers. I understand where they're coming from because it's politically sensitive. But unless we get more workers or more people lose their jobs, the economy could stay too hot, and long-term interest rates will keep climbing as they were today. They're back to November's level. So now let's zoom out. We know that employment truly decides consumer spending, which is about 75% of our economy. We can make a ton of presumptions about the consumer from these numbers. To those who think that credit card usage is up big and therefore dangerous, I counter with these employment numbers. Auto sales not strong? These numbers say that's surprising, unless the auto companies had such bad supply chain problems that they finally caught up and are now outrunning all the job creation with this new product, including unsaleable EVs. These labor numbers make me understand that we learned why what happened this morning made sense. That's Blackstone Real Estate. That's a division of Blackstone, the private equity firm, just shelled out $10 billion for AIR Communities. That's a big real estate investment trust. Owns 76 high-quality rental housing communities in coastal markets like Miami, Los Angeles, Boston, and Washington, D.C. Blackstone says AIR Communities represents the highest quality large-scale apartment portfolio they've ever bought. Blackstone's decision to buy these properties makes me think, while office real estate may still be questionable, apartments might be undervalued. This is different from when Steve Mnuchin and his pals poured $1 billion in New York Community Bancorp, which seemed a little dicey to me because so many of those units were rent-controlled, suspect mortgages. Here, Blackstone intends to put in $400 million to maintain and improve the buildings and intends to invest to pursue further growth. You don't do that if you believe this economy is facing a hard landing or even a soft landing. You only make that kind of decision when you think it's a no-landing scenario, which is what I'm starting to believe. Which brings me full circle to the story of this employment report. We have a robust economy, so I'm a lot less worried about this upcoming earnings season. When I check the record historically, this kind of job creation without a ton of inflation is about as good as it gets, regardless of where short-term interest rates are sitting. Bottom line, if you're hoping for Fed rate cuts from the Fed, I say maybe don't hold your breath. This economy doesn't need them. Just be glad we aren't getting any more rate hikes. Yikes. Ed in Florida. Ed.
Hey, Ed. Hey, Jim. This is Hamed. Right. I'm calling from Florida. Just wanted to see if your opinion on AbbVie. I've had it for a while. I want to see if it's going to be going sideways still, or it's a sell, or
It's been hurt by a turn against these stocks. But the stock was at 182. It's come down to 169. I would tell you that I think that at 163, 164, I would actually start buying it again. We owned it for the trust. We sold it. We made a lot of money. And I'm looking to get back in. If only because they make Botox. And Botox is essential for a lot of these people who take the GLP-1 drugs. Let's go to Bob in Illinois. Bob. Bob?
Hello.
Bob, you're up. It's Jim.
Okay. I've been invested in Cava for a while. It surged from 45 to 65. I got stopped out a little bit around 60, and now it's kind of floundering around. Is there a good point to get back into it?
I like Cava right here. To be honest, I like Cava. I think it's a terrific situation. It's come down from a high. It's got, to me, it's got great fundamentals, long-term growth. Feels a lot like Chipotle did when Chipotle started. You're not going to find the stock to be ever really cheap. It's got too good a bloodline to have that happen. All right, This economy doesn't need rate cuts. Just be glad we aren't getting any more rate hikes after I looked at that employment report on Friday. Oh, man, money tonight. Gold just touched its all-time high. So why aren't the gold mining stocks following in the precious metals footsteps? I'm listing some important reasons why there's such a dichotomy in the space. Then, we're continuing our series on winning small-cap stocks by surveying the financials and seeing which names investors could, quote, bank on for potential gains. And you can find Ferguson inside your home. You can find it on the construction site. But does the stock deserve to be in your portfolio? I'm getting the latest from the CEO. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Over the past couple of months, the price of gold has rallied from $2,000 to well over $2,300. And our resident commodities expert, Carly Garner, thinks it could potentially run all the way to $2,600, possibly even higher. Hey, so far she's been dead right. But there's something strange about this gold rally that you may have noticed. Until very recently, it hadn't really spread to the gold miners. Overall, the actual commodity is up almost 29% from its lows last October. Now, if you look at the miners, though, as represented by the VanEck Gold Miners ETF or the VanEck Junior Gold Miners, that's the younger, smaller gold miners ETF, they didn't do particularly well until they finally took off last month. So why the heck did it take the gold miners 5 months to start catching up to the underlying metal? And what changed that allowed them to catch fire in March? Okay, in January and February, the gold miners were retreating and giving back their late 2023 gains. That was counterintuitive. But it was earnings season. And the reason their stock sunk up the joint is frankly very simple. They didn't put up particularly strong numbers. In fact, we heard some very worrisome comments about rising production costs, and those freaked people out. Take Cramer Faith Barrett Gold, one of the largest gold miners on the planet, my go-to pick because of the CEO, Dr. Mark Bristow, who's one of the best operators in the industry. Barrett reported mid-February, and technically the company turned in a 7-cent earnings beat off a 20-cent basis with inline gold production and inline revenue. The stock got clobbered in response, though, because Wall Street didn't like what they had to say about production costs. We already knew that these costs were steadily creeping higher. Last year, the all-in sustaining costs for Barrett's gold mining's operations came in, keep this number in your head, at $1,335 per ounce, up 9.2%. from the year before. In the fourth quarter, specifically, the all-in sustaining cost for the gold mining arm amounted to $1,364 per ounce, up 8.7% year over year. Hey, now, let me give you some perspective. So this is going to tell you why these stocks have not done well. Just 5 years ago, the company's all-in sustaining costs were $806. See, that's how you get blown out. When your costs are $500, you know, remember, you're spending a lot of money, and then you don't really start realizing big gains until gold goes sky high. Meanwhile, Barrick's overall realized gold price for 2023 was up 8.5% year over year, and its realized gold price for the fourth quarter was only up 3% over the same period. In short, Barrick's production costs seem to be rising faster than the price of gold, at least the prices Barrick was getting. And that dynamic seemed to be getting worse toward the end of last year. Hey, look, worst of all, Barrick's full-year, remember, and this is the best of the best, Barrick's full-year forecast indicated that gold production costs would keep rising, while realized gold prices might be lower than they were last year. This is horrible. Management talked about $1,320 to $1,420 per ounce in all-in sustaining production costs. That would be 3% higher than last year at the midpoint of the range. What's the problem here? Well, Barrick's gold increasingly comes from mines in North America, and we have some of the highest wages in the world here. Previously, they got more production from Latin America, Asia Pacific, and the Middle East, and Africa, and it's just much cheaper to mine. Barrick's also dealing with higher energy costs across the world, and they need to pay huge sums of money to get the specialized machinery they use to actually unearth this stuff. They use a lot of Caterpillar trucks that are very expensive. A lot of them are, by the way, autonomous drive, but it doesn't matter. Plus, as their mines mature, the gold gets harder and harder to extract. In short, over time, the gold miner steadily requires more machinery just to maintain the same level of production. Excuse me. The only thing that can change that are big new discoveries. So there's the cost issue. On top of that, can you believe it? Nobody else sneezes on TV other than me. On top of that is full-year forecast. Barrick also said that it's assuming an average realized selling price of about $1,900 per ounce this year. That'd be down 2.5% from their average price in 2023. Nobody wanted to hear that when these guys reported, especially because the price of gold was already well above that level. So the costs are going up, the price, realized price is down. It seemed like Barrick was either spitting in the face of the gold rally or else management was being very cautious with its guides. And look, this is not about just one operator. We heard very similar stories from most of the other gold miners. Costs going up, realized prices going in the wrong direction. Even though the price of gold had rallied in October and November, that didn't seem to translate into big gains for the miners. And none of them seemed particularly bullish about the future. So what changed a month ago? Why did the gold miners finally catch fire? Well, okay, it's because the latest leg of the gold rally is much stronger than we saw late last year. We've now seen gold shoot up so much that the worries about rising production costs are finally negligible. Remember those numbers from Barrick? They were only expected to sell gold at $1,900 this year. Now gold's over $2,300. That's $400 higher than they expected. And there's a good chance that the precious metal can still go higher. And if you believe Carly Garner, who's been dead right on this issue so far, then we may look at $2,600 gold later this year. Barrick also said something else the last time they reported. For every $100 increase in the price of gold, company expects to make an additional $550 million of earnings for interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. When you do the math, if Barrick instead realizes an average price of $2,300 this year, which is below the current spot price, that's an additional $2.2 billion of earnings for the bad stuff. And that's more than enough to move the needle here. I bring this up because I get a lot of calls from people who are interested in gold. That's true all the time. But it's especially true when we've got a red-hot gold rally. Lately, those callers have been puzzled at the performance of the gold markets, and I don't blame them. By the way, if you're interested in owning gold, there are a bunch of good options. First, if you have an easy way to invest in bullion, even with gold bars from Costco, and they're not really bars, they're little thin things, that's the most direct way to do it. Although, then you need to pay up to keep it somewhere safe. Second, this is one of the few areas where there's actually a very good gold ETF. That's the SPDR, S-P-D-R, Gold Shares ETF, or the GLD for short. Third, you can buy the miners, which usually work, but not at all times. I like Barrick just fine, even now that it's starting to play catch up. But I admit that my choice did not equal the price of the bullion. And I don't know what to do. It always has in the past. Bottom line, the miners didn't participate in the initial leg of the rally because of production cost issues and cautious guidance about pricing. But once gold rallied hard enough, well, guess what? The stocks finally caught fire, too. And I bet they continue to follow the underlying commodity at this point. Now that the costs are well above their all-in costs themselves, it will find with the price that they get is well above. I got to tell you, Barrick's now even better than it was, but I feel badly that it did sit out most of the rally. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, go small or go home. Kramer continues a stroll through the small caps. Financials are next.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Last week, I told you that 2024 could end up being the year that small cap stocks finally start playing catch up with the big boys that have led the market really for years now. If you believe that interest rates are headed lower, and you know I think they are, then you need some small cap exposure, which is why I've been going through the largest sectors in the Russell 2000, giving you my favorite stocks in each group. Last week, we looked at the healthcares and the industrials. Tonight, I want to go where there's a lot of real value that I found, which is the financials. Just like healthcare, there are a lot of them. There's 376 financial names in the Russell 2000, including many smaller banks. Let me give you my top five. All right, the first one is a company called Radian Group, which is a mortgage insurance provider, okay, that also offers various real estate-related services. For the last couple of years, we've watched in awe as home builders managed to rally despite facing much higher mortgage rates. Thanks to a nationwide housing shortage, they can still make fortunes by selling lots of really, expensive homes. Unfortunately, Radian's a little different than the home builders, because as a mortgage insurance play, no, it's not a home, but insurance, they're in more of a volume business. They do much better in a world where more home sales are happening at lower prices. That's why their earnings took a 20% hit last year, and 2024 could also be a down year, but don't give up here. Radian stock has rallied 45% in the last 12 months, including an almost 12% gain year to date, because Wall Street already saw this coming. Meanwhile, the company's reported a series of better than feared quarters, consistently outperforming lowered expectations. And if interest rates come down hard in the second half of the year, well, I got to tell you, I think that, and I think that's likely, then Radian's mortgage insurance business should pick up too. Plus, the stock only sells for 9 times this year's earnings. 9. I mean, come on. I bet it keeps grinding hard. Average stock sells about 18, 19. Okay, so 9 is pretty good. Second favorite small cap financial is Piper Sandler, the Minneapolis-based boutique investment bank with a terrific research division. Just like so many other financials, this one got crushed by the horrific capital markets environment in 2022 and much of 2023. But Piper Sandler's business started rebounding dramatically late last year. In the fourth quarter, they had 49% revenue growth, 129% earnings growth just versus the previous 3 months. Really good. Now, this is not going unnoticed by investors. Piper stock's been bid up from 140 at the end of October to 201 now. But still, it only trades at 17 times earnings. Okay, more than 9, obviously, but it's not expensive. If, like me, you're expecting a continued rebound in IPOs, secondary offerings, debt offerings, and mergers, then this one's a winner. Hey, by the way, these are the same reasons why I think it's worth buying the big investment banks like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, which the Charitable Trust owns. Piper Sandler is just a less well-known way to play that theme, and I like off the beaten trail. I like that. All right, now let's talk small regional banks for a minute. The Russell 2000 is chock full of them because most regionals are small caps by definition. I think they can do better as a group this year, but many of them are not good. And if you want exposure to the smaller regionals, your best bet might just be going with the S&P Regional Banking ETF, and that's called the KRE, and a lot of people focus on the KRE still. There is one small regional bank that I have liked very much, and that's called Texas Capital Bank Shares, okay? The parent company of Texas Capital Bank. It's a conservatively managed operation with strong balance sheet, large capital buffer, means it's safe. But beyond that, Texas Capital Bank is a play on the company's home market, the strongest in the country, which is Texas. And it's been a winner for the intra-country migration trends over the past few years. Plus, it obviously benefits from the ever-rising domestic oil and gas production, and also big wind and solar. I figure all that's good for Texas Capital Bank shares. That said, the analysts have been down on this one of late, with the stock catching a few downgrades over the past couple months. They're worried about valuation or stubbornly higher interest rates. But you know what? Those downgrades haven't hurt Texas Capital Bank shares at all. And that's why the stock's just fine for me. I think it's a terrific sign of strength to get downgrade doesn't go down. And of course, if I'm right, the rates will head lower as the year goes on. This one's a natural winner. How about our fourth small cap financial? Oh, you might remember this from many years ago. It's Donnelley Financial Services. which is one of the descendants of the old R.R. Donnelley, a company that split into three pieces nearly 8 years ago, although Donnelley Financial is the only one that remains as a public company after the other two were acquired. These guys sell software that helps companies and investors prepare for their necessary SEC filings, along with other essential reports and documents. Now, given the nature of this business, the stock's basically hostage to capital markets activity, but the more companies come public, the better they do, and I think it's going to be a bountiful year for new offerings second half. So Donnelley's financial stocks soared during the IPO and SPAC boom in 2022 and 2021 because these deals all came with hundreds of pages of SEC filings. But then when that activity dried up in early 2022, the stock, it just got obliterated.
Sell.
Ever since IPOs began to return meaningful numbers in mid-2022, Donnelley's financial stocks began to make a comeback. It's now been climbing higher for nearly 2 years, pressing into all-time high territory. Even if this move, though, again, not that expensive, selling for less than 18 times this year's earnings estimate. Considering the strong start for the IPO market this year, I think Donnelley Financial can keep putting up excellent numbers that propel its stock higher. I frankly cannot believe that this company hasn't been acquired by somebody. Finally, let's end with a tiny one that's really interesting. It's called World Acceptance Corp. It's an $864 million consumer finance company. World Acceptance Corp offers individual borrowers loans that are generally under $6,000. The average loan size is really $2,359, with an average duration of 20 months. This South Carolina-based company has been around since the 60s and now has more than 1,000 offices across the Sun Belt, the Midwest, and the Mountain West. I like World Acceptance because it's a good old-fashioned non-bank lender. In recent years, many of you have been let down by the credit disruptors. Think Upstart, or to a lesser extent, a firm, companies that wanted to reinvent lending but couldn't seem to turn a big profit. World Acceptance is very different. They lend small amounts of money for short periods of time to people who tend to be on the desperate side, candidly. Companies' credit metrics are a bit above where we'd like, with a delinquency rate of 5.8% at the end of last year. That's headed in the right direction, down from 7.4% at the end of 2022. They're also well-reserved and well-compensated for the risk. Very profitable business. Of course, as interest rates have risen over the past couple of years, the loan volumes have come down, but not drastically. And in the last few quarters, World Acceptance has delivered some big earnings beats. Last time they reported in January, the stock shot up 17%. And again, if the Fed keeps cutting rates in the second half, if starts cutting rates in the second half, these guys will crush it because lower rates will lure in more borrowers. I like World Acceptance. Here's the bottom line. You've now got five fresh small cap ideas from the financials, along with the industrials and the healthcare stocks I highlighted last week. But I still think there's a lot of untapped opportunity in the Russell 2000. So I'll keep searching for potential small winners over the next couple of days, because I think this is where the action will be in the second half. Let's go to Dan in Missouri, please. Dan.
Hey, Dan, this is hi, Jim. This is Dan from Kansas City, Missouri. My question is on Block. On April 4th, Morgan Stanley downgraded it with a $62 price target, and then the same day, Benchmark upgraded it with a $99 price target. What is your opinion on Block,
well,
buy, sell, or hold?
You know, we had Amrita Ahuja. She's the CFO on when we were in California. And I've got to tell you, Dan, from Kansas City, Missouri, where we went to when it was minus nine, I am not thinking that this is the right thing to downgrade the stock. If anything, I'd be upgrading the stock. This company's incredibly well run, and I didn't buy into the negativity that we saw in the downgrade. No, not with this management team. It's too strong. Let's go to Ira in Florida. Ira.
Ira in Claremont, Florida. Jim, a few years ago, I bought a stock in a company called Goldman Sachs in the low 200s. It's now in the low 400s. My question is, should I sell half of it and run? Should I sell all of it? Should I hold it and buy more?
I want you to do this. It's a great question. I would sell a quarter of it. Now, why would I not be more aggressive on the sell side? I think the numbers are going to come through great. I'm more worried about a market pullback than I am about a pullback at Goldman Sachs, which I think is going to have a terrific quarter. And it's just been smoking hot. And the David Solomon that he's not doing his job, all that stuff was nonsense. They are doing fabulously. And I just wish that Morgan Stanley, the one I own for my travel trust, were doing a little bit better. But maybe this new CEO can move it along this quarter. I still think there's a lot of untapped opportunity in the Russell 2000, which nobody talks about. Let's talk about the mega caps, not us. We talk about everything. Hopefully my list of the financials will help you curate your interest in the space. And don't worry, we're keeping track of everyone. We may even build an ETF. It'll be a Ben Stodo ETF because he's the research director and he just loves to hear his name constantly. Just kidding, but he's really good. All right, much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with Ferguson. After acquiring four companies this fiscal year alone, I'm hearing more about how the company continues to expand with the CEO. It's a commercial construction company with small residential. Then if you go negative on Megacap in this tape, well, you better prepare to pay the price. We learned this the hard way with one of our stocks in Chapel Trust, and you know it, the stock, and you probably think, what would we do with being negative? And of course, all your calls rapid fire tonight's edition of the lightning round. So stay with Cramer. If you believe that interest rates will come down this year, I'm still a believer. Anything construction related could keep winning. Which brings me to Ferguson. It's a major North American distributor for all sorts of plumbing, heating, fire safety, and infrastructure products. Now, look, we had these guys back on in June of 2022. Since then, the stock has more than doubled. Can you imagine that? Trouncing the S&P 500 over the same period. Now, when Ferguson reported a month ago, it's really interesting. The results came in weaker than expected. Stock got clobbered one day, down 6%. Since then, it's already rebounded and completely hitting a 52-week high again today. Even though that last quarter was, some people saw it soft, management remains very confident, as you will see in the second half of the year. I think you'll be right. Don't take it from me, though. Let's check in with Kevin Murphy. He's the CEO of Ferguson to get a better read on the situation. Mr. Murphy, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you so much, Jim, for having me. Great to be here.
You had a very positive attitude 2 years ago. I didn't know whether to share it or not because I was worried about rate increases. But you've got an added win behind your back. We've got mega projects. I don't think people realize how big these are and what a big role you play. So why don't you tell us about how those are kind of divorced from interest rates?
Yeah, so we talked last time about us being just over half residential, just under half non-residential. And we talked about some of the activity that was starting to happen on the non-residential side. And when we look at those large, major capital projects, those projects that are north of $400 million in construction value, we remain really bullish on it. Onshoring, reshoring of manufacturing, data center activity, sustainability like electric vehicles, battery charging, storage, chips, all very
chips
positive.
Act. Like when we saw the Taiwan Semi, the biggest construction project in America, that's going to have your stuff.
Those are great projects for us. They play well for us because not only is it the commercial mechanical piping systems, but it's everything from underground water, wastewater infrastructure through commercial mechanical piping systems, industrial pipe valve and fitting, really tailor-made for a multi-customer group company like ours for non-residential.
Now, what's difficult, I think, for our viewers is they don't see your name. They see Caterpillar, right? So how do they get their arms around or their eyes around where you are if they're seeing a big construction job?
We're the behind-the-scenes player that's adding to construction productivity. So we're a B2B seller. We're selling to the trade professional. 95% of what we do is to the trade professional, only 5% to the consumer. And so we're out there working with contractors to specify what products are needed on a project. How do we make construction productivity a reality so that the job is better because Ferguson was involved?
Okay, well, let's talk about who can make the job better. One of the things that I know and that you have specialized in telling people is trades. We don't make tradespeople anymore, but obviously those are fantastic jobs, but our parents had them, I feel, or in my case, my generation had, and then the next generation is not picking it up. But aren't they more lucrative jobs than ever?
It's a big concern for us. When we look at, in fact, it's one of the things that keeps me awake at night when I'm asked. If you look at our trade professionals, we're 300,000 plus trade professionals short. And that number is getting bigger, not smaller. And we look at it and say, this has got to be a kitchen table conversation where we're talking about it being a great career, a wonderful way to make a living, a wonderful way to start a new business and be an entrepreneur. And they're well-paying jobs that are building America. And that's what we need. That's what we need to keep this economy running.
Okay, so let's think how we do that. How about we've got all these small companies. I know we talked about before the show, but you could roll them up and hire people. Maybe even go to high schools, where community college. Where do we get these people? Because we still have some unemployment in the country, even though we're 3.8. But this is something that you do not need to get a comp sci degree at Stanford to take the job.
And quite frankly, it's a durable career. As you look at the advance of AI and such, what we're looking at is both on a nationwide level as well as the grassroots. We partner with organizations like MicroWorks, who is doing great work to really start to advance the trades. We're involved with women in plumbing and piping. So we're involved at the national level to really make it attractive and, again, make it a kitchen table conversation. But we're also at the grassroots levels. We got 1,700 branches across the United States and Canada where we're working with local high schools, local trade schools, to try and make this an attractive place for young people
to
go.
What happened? These jobs pay a fortune. They're not bad. What happened?
We all of a sudden thought that the only way to make a living and have a sustainable career was to get a college degree. That's not necessarily the only way.
For 100 G's, for 80 G's a year.
And we've shown that you can make a very, very good living. Coach your son or daughter's T-ball team at night and take care of the building of America.
Well, I like it. Now, let me ask you, when you get a job that's from the CHIPS Act, is the government giving it to private contractors and then you get orders from those contractors?
So the way we work is actually, and this is a catalyst for the way we want to work going forward. Historically, our focus has been, you've got to be the best provider of material to the individual trade. So in the case of utility contractors doing water and wastewater, the best for them. Commercial mechanical piping contractors, industrial pipe valve and fitting contractors. But what we said is, we're the only company out there that's doing such a broad range
right.
of materials and customer focus. So we're actually going closer to the source of funds, closer to the Taiwan semiconductors, the general contractors on the job, to work on what are their needs? How do we make sure that we're taking care of sustainability concerns on product? How do we make sure they've got credibility on source of supply and supply chain, while never abandoning that trade professional that is the core to what we do?
Okay, so data centers being built, and we know that that Eaton's going to get stuff, and Vertiv's going to get stuff, Ferguson's going to get stuff. Who's building these that you get called?
Yeah, we get called again. That site contractor that's doing the water lines coming up, the commercial mechanical piping contractors that are doing the cooling systems, large diameter steel pipe, truckloads and truckloads.
This has nothing to do with rates. That's why your stock keeps going higher. People don't understand.
And it's a durable run. We think that durable run is, call it 5+ years as we go out. In fact, it starts to really hit its stride as we get 25, 26.
I feel badly that you're pigeonholed because your stuff is so gorgeous for the residential, but it's just a kind of a little bit of your business.
Yeah, new residential construction, just a little south of 20% of what we do.
Right.
But the good news is that balance is there as well. We're just over half, call it 60% repair, replace, remodel.
Right.
40% new construction. That balance is a good place for us,
James. Oh, it sure is. And that's why the stock keeps going higher and higher and higher. That's Kevin Murphy, CEO of Ferguson, F-E-R-G. We always laugh about this stock because we know it seems to go up every day. I'm not kidding. You got to watch this stock. Mad Money's back after the break.
Last call on CNBC.
We are at the intersection of business.
Businesses are already relocating to better tax environments.
And money.
Mortgage rates are going to be around 6 or 7%.
Last call, next, CNBC.
Morning, everyone. Ready for the big meeting?
I have to write this project plan.
I just need to reply to 40 emails. Linda? Oh, their date disappeared. Too many emails, messages, docs. That's why I have Grammarly. It's AI that helps me write faster and better everywhere. IT just cleared it for the whole company.
I was lost in the dock.
Grammarly, for business. Easier said, done.
Every day, more dog people and more vets are deciding it's time for a fresh approach to pet food. They're quitting the kibble and kicking the cans and feeding their dogs dog food that's actually, well, food. Developed with vets, made from real meat and veggies, portioned for your dog, and delivered right to your door. It's smarter, healthier pet food. Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/realfood.
Was that necessary?
No. Neither is missing your daughter's competition to do payroll. With Paycom, employees do their own payroll, so you don't have to miss your daughter's big day. Time to shine. Get Paycom and make the unnecessary unnecessary.
New from Realtor.com. RealView Maps now feature precise heat, wind, and air quality ratings on every home listing. Trust the number one app real estate professionals trust. Download the Realtor.com app today.
Home warranty.
Focus. Warranty.
Yes,
focus on an American Home Shield warranty. It can protect your covered home systems and appliances, like this AC, with a repair or replacement.
Yes, thank you.
Home.
It's Ohm, not home.
Yeah, it's Ohm.
Pretty sure it's home.
Visit ahs.com today for 40%.
It is time! Some of the White Rock Paper. That's where Brock Park Holding Tim this Oxford. Bye bye bye. Shells with Jim Curtin. No, the course talk question is coming. Step in the grip. We play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Let's start with Julian in Florida. Julian.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking the call.
Great, you're with me. What's going on?
Nothing much. I'm actually from Philly, but I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida. I just wanted to ask you a question about Hawaiian Electric. I recently started a position in it. I saw it was kind of low, so I said, man, this looked like a good investment. So I want to know your thoughts on that. Do you think
I still fear it. I still fear it after the environmental damage. I am concerned that you can't really put a price on it. I understand it's $11. It seems like the price, but I am concerned that the stock could be worth still too much versus I think that the fires were too great and therefore the stock could still go lower. Let's go to Sal in New York. Sal.
What's cooking, Kramer?
Well, not much right now. How about you?
Well, we got real good Paulie's Pomodoro sauce brewing. Hey, some people like making meatballs. I like making money.
I like anyway, that. I share that.
You had the pom-poms out for this energy transfer company a couple of years ago. For better or for worse, it pays a small dividend, has a stock repurchase in place, has a small float, but our administration's backwards energy policies are causing their ships and stock to be sinking. Is this a perfect example that of we should be buying when everyone is crying? The company is Accelerate Energy, EE.
I would. I think that the notion that there should be a pause in 2028 was one of the dumber things the administration has done, because that canceled a lot of projects that need take like 5-6 years to do. And that's why that stock's going so low. I'd be willing to bet that they have to change that 2028 and that stock is going to fly. Let's go to John in Michigan. John.
Hey, Jim. Love the show.
Thank you.
I wanted to know what your thoughts were on gold, silver, and Sibanye-Stillwater, SBSW.
Yeah, that's a strange company. I mean, we don't know really enough about it. We know it has a yield. We know that it's got good properties. Historically, I liked Stillwater. I didn't know the other part of it. So I think you're okay, but I will come back because I don't want to recommend something and it turns out it doesn't have the right assets. Let's go to Christine in California. Christine.
Hello, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. What's up?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How can I help?
I have a question on stock symbol PEN, and I'd just like to know your thoughts.
Okay, medical device, I'm going to send you to Abbott Labs because at 110, that's the right stock to buy. The stock got hit very big on some litigation risk that I don't think is warranted. I would rather see you in ABT than PEN. Let's go to Joe in New York. Joe.
Hey, Jimbo, what's going on?
I don't know. Just doing the show. How about you?
I'm pretty good. I'm with my investment advisor, Susie Kramer, my dog. We want to ask your advice on EMR.
All right, EMR is now it's working. I was upset that they did a hostile takeover. They fixed the situation, and the stock's been a horse. And because it's one of those companies that's levered to the data center and to the reshoring, reindustrialization. So what can I say? It's working. It didn't work, and now it's working. Let's go to Peter in New York. Peter.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill. How are you, sir?
I am well. How about you?
Good. Your wisdom, humor, knowledge is second to none. And your
thank
crew,
you.
Man, Sean, Kevin, Nicole, and Alyssa, boy, they're also number one, too. Second
wow.
to none.
You're absolutely right. I'm glad you mentioned all the names because they're fabulous. They are fabulous. How can I help?
I just have to give one quick shout out to Marty M., who's been a fan of yours but afraid to call you for years. Marty M., Jimmy's on the line, and he loves to be watching the show and laughing.
Marty, so, come on.
You're the best, sir. Anyway, my question is about Ford.
Right, well, I think Ford's doing well. I mean, but, you know, the yield's 4.5. It's the stock's starting to come back. It is underperformed GM, but it is up 10% for the year, and I don't think that that's all that bad. I do think that GM up 23% must make Jim Farley feel like, wow, I got to do something. But I do like the story, and I think that the trust has a big position, and I feel very good about it. Let's go to Harash in South Carolina. Harash.
Hey, we are Jim Kramer from Indian Person, club member, longtime listener, made a lot of money by your advice.
Oh, thank you.
And you are very genuine person, and I told to a lot of Indian friends that go to this club and become member. His advice is helping me to make money and make the decision that I should buy or not buy. And it helped me a lot these last 15 years. So,
well,
thank you for
being
all those for us. My question is regarding Vertex Pharmaceutical.
Which one? I'm sorry. Vertex is terrific. I love it. The CF franchise is just amazing. It's such a horrible disease. I think Vertex is very, very good. People worry about the pain medicine. I'm not. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab.
If you go negative on a mega cap, you're going to have to pay the price. That's the lesson I learned from deciding we should sell some Alphabet for the Charitable Trust in the last couple of weeks. I'm worried that all these new AI query systems will eventually become an existential challenge to Google's lucrative search business. Because if you go to Microsoft for ChatGPT, I mean, you're much more likely to use Bing next time. At the same time, I thought my view represented conventional wisdom that Google isn't as solid as it used to be. Didn't seem all that controversial, frankly. But that conventional wisdom was blown out of the water today by a series of very positive analyst notes. First, the notes made clear that Alphabet has lost almost no market share whatsoever when it comes to search. The amazingly lucrative franchise is undiminished, and the ad revenue is very robust. As a piece from Opco that I read today explains, quote, search advertising remains the most effective advertising medium that exists today based on the pay-click advertising model. With roughly 70% market share, Alphabet is by far the U.S. leader. End quote. Second, YouTube continues to explode. The always entertaining Needham analyst Laura Martin has said in the past that the YouTube, well, it's a YouTube might be worth $423 billion. Given that the whole company's only worth $1.9 trillion, maybe Alphabet can be considered undervalued. I've been worried that these guys don't know how to manage their media business. They picked up an insanely valuable NFL package from DirecTV, and analysts at Morgan Stanley estimate they could lose more than $1 billion per year on the contract. They seem to have no idea how to advertise against football games. They were running cat videos when so many for commercials, when so many are hanging on every play for the fantasy leagues at the end of the last quarter. But rock star Ruth Porat, the president of Alphabet, says it will generate an attractive return. So, again, maybe I'm being too harsh. She's money. Plus, as Bloomberg said in a wildly positive article about YouTube recently, quote, young people have a muscle memory-like instinct to engage with the service, end quote. They quote a Pew survey, PEW, that 71% of U.S. teens are on it currently, and 16% describe their use as almost constant. You can see why any consumer product company would want to advertise there. Those are prime years to reach teens. You need to be in front of them when they make their lifetime decisions on stuff like toothpaste or razor, cereal. Third reason to hold on tomorrow. Google's Cloud Next conference kicks off in Las Vegas with Thomas Kurian. That's K-U-R-I-A-N, excuse my Philadelphia accent, who runs their cloud business. And Google Cloud is a $41 billion revenue rate run rate that Bank of America says could grow to $58 billion. I bet Kurian wows the audience. I've seen him. He can do it. Fourth, Alphabet's constantly doing a ton of research on products we never think about. Michael Sembles, the brilliant strategist at J.P. Morgan, who writes the Eye on the Market newsletter, noted that last week that Google's AI can map the true shape of proteins in hours and at minimal cost. We're talking about the basic building blocks of everything here. And it took years to map even 20%, costing millions of dollars. There are a ton of other reasons to stay long that are buried within the bowels of the joint. Alphabet may be doing something with Apple and AI. Remember how that got everybody excited, but nothing's happened since. Look, they aren't getting any credit for Waymo. They're actually somewhat successful autonomous vehicle business, especially when you see that Elon Musk talked up his Tesla self-driving business on Friday, and his stock just took off like one of his rockets. And you can get all this for just 16 times next year's earnings. That's a radical devaluation in its price earnings multiple from what it used to be. Alphabet's truly inexpensive by any measure, including one involving itself. So we shall sell no more for the Travel Trust. It's just got too much going for it, like nearly all the other mega caps. The next time you think about betting against them or selling them, remember that even if there's a problem, these guys have so many ways to pull a rabbit out of a proverbial hat and turn things around. You don't get that $1 trillion valuation for doing nothing. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.